The Coffee Conundrum. That's the name of today's little tidbit, mini thing, the Coffee Conundrum. And I alluded to this little tidbit that I was going to orate on a prior clip. Today seems to be the right day to be doing it. Last day of March, March 31, 2022. So yeah, coffee is something that, well, probably many of us don't give a second thought to, right? We always think about the other things in this society that are, you know, the stimulants and the sedatives, etc., that have always been given more of a negative buzz or connotation in society. But coffee is one of those things that, well, most of the time you'll see pro information on it, but sometimes you'll see some con information, but never really getting to the root of why this is maybe something that you want to second think. So I found this interesting article, and take note that it's actually on web.archive.org, so that means it's been pulled from the main web. I wonder why. And there's also a bunch of links contained in this. I'm going to add this to the show notes when I post it, but there's a bunch of links in here too for further exploration on this topic, but lo and behold, many of these links do not work either, because I'm sure they're trying to, well, censor this information, right? It would behoove them to do such. So this information is probably stuff you haven't heard before, but very, very important, more than important, vital, actually. So let's open up a little bit about what its goal is, what the goal of coffee or caffeine in general, but I'm going to be focusing on coffee because that's probably one of the most common forms. I think most people are coffee drinkers than tea, especially here in the States. Maybe in the UK and in Australia, they have more of a tea culture, at least from what I've heard. But it seems to be something that, well, all of the world actually drinks, even though here in America, it seems to be more of a beverage than tea. And also, it's the strongest form of caffeine. And there are also other compounds within coffee, like the phytoestrogens, which can raise estradiol, which is a type of estrogen, which is not present in something like tea. So here, let's open up with a bit about the coffee conundrum. The easiest way to control a populace is to poison it. Poisoning makes people weak and needy. Weak and needy people literally beg to be ruled. You cannot farm lions, only lambs. Narcotics work best at building addiction, providing escapism, and destroying strength in the body. As an invading force, this is optimal. This is why every great nation that has spread across the earth has used laws that made narcotics illegal. Inversely, this is why our bought and paid for leaders either smuggle the drugs into our society or legalize them, because our leaders do not work for us. Of course, we know that already. In order to rule over any people, the narcotics must flow fast and furious in order to destroy the resistance potential in the public. Coffee is one such narcotic, more aptly caffeine. In order to maintain rule over a weakened and addicted populace, you must make the slaves become obsessed with the narcotics first and foremost, as opposed to what the culture needs to do in order to maintain itself, which is to stay healthy and clean and produce healthy, strong, and vibrant offspring who can maintain the tribe's strength and numbers. You must make as many people as addicted as possible, so the only focus the culture has is getting high, as opposed to maintaining its sovereignty and strength. And I would say that junk food works in the same way. So does propaganda in the form of, you know, antisocial media and news and such. It's all the same program, just some of them affect us actually chemically via consumption, and some affect us in different ways via visuals. You must market the slaves' poisoning of themselves as normal and all part of the immense freedom they have down in the slave camp. There are such groups documented throughout history who do take over cultures and, of course, destroy them with narcotics and many other fake freedoms that weaken the herd both physically and spiritually. The EU and North America are now about to fall to this covert group, and coffee has plenty to do with the stealth attack, as do all the other health and strength-destroying chemicals and narcotics that are smuggled into our society. These health-destroying compounds are brought into our society purposely in order to bring about its downfall and our subjugation to an enemy most know nothing about. And that's the thing with finding out, you know, who is behind these things. It's so pervasive and permeating. It's almost like the air that we breathe at this point. You can't even oftentimes make heads or tails of it. You just know it's like something that's in the environment that's, you know, not a service to you. So here are some facts right here about coffee. My screen just went blank. One second. Okay. Coffee is an alkaloid that the caffeine is an alkaloid that the coffee plant uses to kill bugs, which eats its seeds. The coffee plant also uses caffeine in the coffee pods to kill surrounding plants, so the coffee plant can attain more sunlight and grow larger. Caffeine is a pesticide which causes genetic termination in living cells that come in contact with it. And it's always interesting, I always think about this. They always say, you know, don't give it to a pet, you know, don't let a pet get into anything with caffeine. If you have chickens and you prepare scraps for them, don't put any caffeine or anything like that in with the scraps, because we know already how it affects animals, who are of course a lot smaller than us. But what is it doing to us over time, even though we're larger, right? So that was number one, a bit more. Number two, MRI images taken before and after one cup of coffee showed decrease in blood flow to the brain by 45%. And it's always been said that the opposite is true, that it increases blood flow. I think it actually makes people more foolish and lowers their IQ and makes them more forgetful over time, which we may just correlate with, oh, you know, they're getting old. But of course, that's just a program right there, believing something like that. But nevertheless, coffee has an actual result in doing this, according to this article. Number three, brain imaging studies of chronic coffee drinkers showed they present the same degradation in their brains as chronic alcoholics. Very interesting. Cigarette smokers and Parkinson's patients. Wow. So yeah, there's a lot here with what it actually can cause. Let's get a little bit more into this now. That was number two. I got this new phone. I'm still trying to learn the ropes of it a bit. Okay. And I still have to get that microphone, which I have not gotten yet, albeit the sound is a bit muffled right now. All right, just loading this page right here. So that was number two. Let's see what it says about number three. We just mentioned number three with the Alzheimer's and the Parkinson's. Of course, take into consideration that oftentimes people who take in a lot of caffeine also take in other deleterious substances. Like when they do those studies and they say that, oh, you know, red meat causes cancer, they also study people who eat the lowest quality CAFO meat, people who eat tons of like stuff like bacon and hot dogs, which are all like processed and like preserved and stuff. So it's not necessarily one thing. Also with people who have people who have Parkinson's, I think Alzheimer's too, they often find plaque in the brain from polyunsaturated lipids. So of course it's more than just one factor, but nevertheless, we're talking about coffee, so I'll keep it to that. The next fact, coffee can cause an urge to move one's bowels because this is the way the body tries to eliminate the poison from the system. So you think that it actually helps you poop, and yes, it does, but it's not really inducing healthy peristalsis, or because you have enough minerals or enzymes or lipids or bacteria in your system. It's because your body is trying to avoid poison. Another fact, coffee increases energy via the human fight or flight metabolic response because the body is afraid of the caffeine-based poison. Coffee doesn't give energy, it removes it from the body. The energy a person feels when they drink coffee is the body going into overdrive because caffeine is a poison and all poisons activate an energy release in the body, fight or flight. Coffee removes the energy from the system, and many people in the metabolic community think that this is good to have something that is a metabolic stimulant, but why do you want to focus on revving the system up? Wouldn't it be better to bring the system more into balance as opposed to revving it up? I don't think that makes much sense. That sounds very allopathic to me personally, and I think a lot of people who are in that paradigm are very much stuck in allopathic thought with the obsession with germs and all of these things. I mean, eating that style of diet is kind of the way that we ate for millennia before we lived in an agrarian society. And of course, coffee is part of the agrarian society. So it's a bit misaligned with how it's really supposed to be in regards to their belief with just speeding it up. Oftentimes the body will slow down because it's in a healing phase, right? So when someone, let's say, goes from being hyperthyroid, because typically all hypothyroidism starts out hyper, so you go up first, what goes up must come down, so then they're in this energy deficit of being down, right? And a lot of hypothyroid people are addicted to coffee because they want that energy. It would make more sense to focus on getting the proper nutrients and balancing the body whilst it's in the healing phase than using a neurotoxin to speed it up. Just my thoughts, right? A little bit more. When the fight or flight response is triggered in the body, the lower IQ centers of the brain are activated, as well as hormonal systems in control of aggression, violence, irrational and illogical decision-making, jealousy, rage, anger, fear, and paranoia. And I do think there is a correlation between caffeine, especially coffee, and like mental illness and psychosis. I think it takes a lot of it to produce that, but you can also see that with cocaine and cannabis as well. A bit more, when measured, one coffee activated the fight or flight response for 3 consecutive weeks, yowza, even though no other caffeine was consumed after that one cup. This means the most primal low IQ centers of the brain, the limbic system, are activated for 3 weeks after consuming the one cup, even if no other caffeine is consumed in that 3-week period. Making decisions through the limbic center of the brain, our caveman portion, is also proven to lead to chaotic situations because of the low mental processing capabilities for that area the mind is famous for. So we can see now why this coffee culture, which is super huge here in America, especially on the West Coast. I think they like darker roasts on the West Coast, but it's everywhere. I mean, it's like pizza places, especially, you know, around, I think, you know, in New York, but it's probably like that in a lot of very kind of metropolitan areas, just consumed with shop after shop selling this stuff, right? A bit more. When coffee is consumed, the limbic part of the brain is hyperactivated and the higher learning centers of the mind inhibited. The limbic part of the brain is only concerned with sex, reproduction, protection of territory, food acquisition, and personal safety. The limbic portion of the brain is the most primitive and the least developed portion of the mind complex. When you want to outsmart or dominate another person, it's best that their limbic system is activated because it brings them into the mental state equivalent of a child. So that would behoove Big Z, would it not? The birth control pill inhibits the clearing of ingested caffeine, and that's because of the excess estrogen. And of course, that's a big, major dose of estrogen, but you could also have this happen to you if you have estrogen excess in your tissues or in relation to the ratio of progesterone, if you're constantly stressed, if you're taking in lots of phytoestrogenic foods, which of course they all promote as heart healthy. This effect is increased dramatically by alcohol or painkiller utilization, not being able to clear the caffeine, therefore causing many of the caffeine poisoning symptoms, which gets treated as other things once person reaches the Zogspital. Coffee is proven to cause an enlarged prostate, high anxiety, insomnia, depression, birth defects, pain syndromes, unnatural breathing patterns, brain damage, hyperactivity, learning disorders from the brain damage, behavior disorders, fatigue, certain types of cancer, Crohn's, IBS, colitis, heart disease, headaches, PMS, increased incidence of muscle and tendon injury, joint pain, and carpal tunnel. Just a short list right there. And of course, there's always going to be articles that say it helps with a lot of things, but I think it's just a band-aid. I think it's just like using almost how the way someone would use like a pill or a herb or something to fix something. It doesn't get to the root cause of why the person's having the problem in the first place. A bit more. Coffee causes fat gain and cellulite because it triggers the body's fight or flight systems, which any poison or threat does. So stress eventually changes the body's primary fuel source requirements to one of fat. When the body is threatened, it preserves fat as its primary fuel source. That's gluconeogenesis. That's what all the low carbohydrate people do. And a lot of those people, interestingly enough, are also addicted to coffee.
When the body is threatened, it prefers fat over sugar or protein. Constant activation of the body's fight or flight system via the daily ingestion of the caffeine poison aids in a metabolic shift to fat storage and fat conservation, because again, the body prefers fat as a fuel source when it's fighting an intoxic intruder and when it's stressed. That's basically the whole base of the low carbohydrate diet, because fat contains 9 calories per gram for the fight, as opposed to 4 calories per gram when housed with sugar or protein. Welcome to the land of coffee-induced fat gain, weight gain, and cellulite. Now, here's something that's actually off base, but I'll read it anyway. It's true, but we don't really want to do this. Coffee can block iron absorption, causing the vast majority of anemia today. And yes, that is true. That's why a lot of these metabolic people like to have coffee with their red meat, which typically contains iron, you know, heme iron, not the synthetic iron. But anemia is not what we're taught to believe. It's actually not an iron deficiency. It's iron in the wrong place in the body. It's typically a deficiency in other things like copper and magnesium and vitamin D and stuff like that. So just having coffee and saying, oh, I'm going to have this because it blocks iron. There's other ways to detox iron out of the tissues. We ladies who cycle get a chance once a month to get rid of that iron. So yeah, there's many ways to get rid of it. Some are doing the blood donation, but I wouldn't say I'd really recommend that, because you don't know what they're going to be doing with that blood. I'm sure it's probably something nefarious, and if you're Rh negative, especially. A bit more. Here we have an article clearly explaining why caffeine destroys human potential within the brain, leading to lower life performance and achievement. And of course, I went to this article and it was 404, but I think you get the gist thus far from what I've been talking about. And just a touch more, an investigation conducted by an author of the most extensive book ever written on coffee reviewed almost every scientific research piece regarding it, and his conclusion was that there's absolutely no scientific evidence whatsoever about any of the health benefits on the human body or mind at any level anyway. He openly declares that any positive promotion of coffee consumption is a blatant lie, doing grave harm to our entire society, and that the publication says any positive effects of coffee are false and can be traced back to a very powerful, covert, and secret coffee lobby, which has both commercial and ruling family origins. And the author goes on to say, how many coffee shops have opened in your town in the last 20 years? Ask yourself that. Quite a few around my neck of the woods. And something else, a new investigation of coffee shows that it increases cancer growth and spread dramatically. So there's a lot here in this little article. Like I said, I'm going to add this to the notes for this little mini. So a lot to think about. And of course, some of these things are 404, but I mean, just ask yourself, do you need to use something every single day to change your perception or your feelings or your stance? If you're needing it to use the toilet, maybe you're eating the wrong foods, or maybe your beliefs are not so good. And also times you want to think about if you're using something in the evening tide every single evening to knock yourself out because you're revving yourself up so much in the morning with the coffee. So a lot of things to think about here as you ponder this. And I will say that if you want to kind of wean off it, even though it's still caffeine, something like yerba mate, which has no fluoride and no phytoestrogens, could be something that you could use in the interim. But overall, it's really about creating more energy naturally within the system, maybe getting in a walk first thing in the morning, just doing something that basically isn't this. I know it's difficult oftentimes to create new habits, but it starts with the desire to do such. So I'll leave everyone with that for the last day of March. I'm going to enjoy this hike. It's a great day to be alive. I hope it is for you too.